Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Michelle Cashatt. I'm your co-host today, and joining me in today's conversation is Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Now, one interesting piece of trivia that many of our listeners may not know. I hope you don't mind that I'm disclosing personal information.
No.
Kind of too late now anyway, so.
I mean, you've been doing it for all these years, so why stop now?
Why stop? Oh, I love my God. So interesting piece of personal trivia that y'all may not know about is that both Michael and I are musicians.
It's true.
It's true. I'm a pianist and Michael is both a pianist and a guitarist. And I have it on good authority. You're actually very good.
I'm less good at piano only because I never practice. I was a music major for the first 2 years of college. And I thought, you know, I wanted to play professionally. But when I went to college, and particularly at Baylor University, where there were these amazing musicians from all over the world, I realized that the competition was really stiff. And I thought, you know, this probably is going to be a great hobby for me, but probably not much more.
Well, you know, I used to be, well, you maybe don't know, I used to be a piano teacher. I actually taught for, oh my goodness, for probably 15 to 20 years. So you just confessed to a piano teacher that you didn't practice, which is...
I know, which was kind of the story of my life when I was taking lessons. You know, I used to dread going to class or to my lessons just because I never felt like I'd practiced enough. Even when I was, you know, practicing every day, I always felt like there was more I could have done.
Which there is some truth to that. But I think it's fascinating that we're both musicians, even though that's not what we're doing for a living. And what's interesting is that I am a big believer that there's so much that we can learn, both about life and leadership from music and from this whole process of learning music, regardless of your instrument. Not that long ago, you had an experience related to the Nashville Symphony that profoundly impacted your perspective on leadership.
Yeah, so I always try to, you know, milk the ideas about, out of any experience I get and see parallels. And, you know, mine just works like that. I'm kind of a lateral thinker. But Gail and I went to the Nashville Symphony with our daughter, Mary, and her husband, Chris. And they had bought tickets for Gail's birthday, and it was incredible. It took place at Nashville's world-renowned Skimmerhorn Symphony Center, which if you haven't seen that, have you been there?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's an amazing symphony center, one of the best in the entire country. But the orchestra that night was conducted by Hugh Wolf, and he and the orchestra performed Beethoven's Concerto No. 4 in G major for piano and orchestra. Then they had the break. Oh, no, I should say also Horacio Gutierrez played the piano. Amazing. And then after the intermission, the orchestra performed Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dance Opus 45. I have no idea what all that stuff means. I just like saying it. But
well, I just have to tell you, for a moment there, I was just stunned to silence because you sound so accomplished.
Okay, here's another true confession. I used to be an FM disc jockey on a station that played classical music. And so I had to learn to pronounce all that stuff.
I really did not know this. How could I have known you for this long? I didn't.
Well, I'm not proud of it. I got fired from the job, but that's another story. So
that's another episode, which I am definitely going to ask you about at some time.
So there we were. We were actually on the second row of the concert, which was fantastic. I was like 20 feet from Hugh Wolf. And I was totally swept up in the experience. I mean, that's the great thing about amazing music, particularly when it's performed live. You know, you just can be swept along and everything is timeless and you're just enjoying the moment. And I was especially fascinated to watch how he led the orchestra. It was really unbelievable. And it didn't take long before I started seeing some parallels between that and leadership. So I've written about it. I did a podcast a couple years ago on the same topic, but I distilled from that 8 leadership lessons that I learned from watching this symphony.
Well, I cannot wait to hear them because, as I've already said, I'm kind of a music nerd, so I'm really looking forward to unpacking these today with you. So let's go ahead and get started because regardless of your style of music, you may listen to classical, you may listen to pop, whatever it is, the idea of conductor, somebody that's leading it, has some very powerful implications for us. So it's a metaphor that all of us can learn from, regardless of our musical experience or even our leadership experience. So let's go ahead and get started. We have 8 lessons. What is
The first lesson is start with a plan. I mean, it sounds pretty simple, but you know, conductors have their own version of this. They start with a musical score, which is a very detailed plan, and they get a clear idea in their head of how it should sound. And conductors look at the same sheet of music. They have a different vision for how it's going to sound, but they start with a plan. And then what they're trying to do is to create or recreate in real time their musical vision. And I think as a leader, that's where it has to start too. We have to start with a vision. What is it that we're trying to create in our companies, in our organizations, in our churches, whatever it is, wherever we're leading? What is it that we're trying to create? So do you have clarity about the destination where you're trying to take your team? And, you know, there's a lot of talk in the corporate world, at least back when I was in the corporate world, a lot of talk about strategy. Everybody wanted to talk about the importance of strategy and debate about which strategy is the most effective and which is the most efficient. But strategy is really the second question. The single most important question inside of a corporation or any kind of human organization, I think, is what is the vision? That answers the question, what is it that we're trying to accomplish, or where is it that we're trying to go? The second question is a question about strategy, and that's a question about how do we get there? So there are a lot of different ways to get to the same destination, but if you're not clear on the destination, the strategy doesn't really matter. And so getting clear on that vision, you know, it's clear in a symphony because you got the musical score, but it's got to be clear in our leadership as well. We've got to know the vision or the destination.
And it seems that many times, kind of as you just hinted there that so many organizations, whether they're churches or corporations or whatever, always want to tweak their strategy. They're looking for the next easy way to get something done, but they just haven't spent the time getting clear about what it is.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason that is, Michelle, is because vision is a harder thing, you know, to come up with, to get clear on what we want for the organizations that we lead, or to get clear what we want in our own life. It takes some real work, and it takes some real unplugging, some real think time to make that happen. And so that's why I think a lot of people would rather be involved in activity or debate strategy, because it's a lot more, I don't know, it's easy to get your mind around.
More black and white.
Yeah, a little bit more
tangible. And you didn't ask me to say this, but basically that's what Living Forward does in many ways, is really help you set aside time and, you know, block out the time and the intentionality down and get clear about where it is you are headed.
Yeah, it's true. And that's really applying vision to your personal life. But I think it's related because people who don't have a clear vision for their own life aren't usually clear in the vision casting that they're doing for their organization. And we say in the book, and you probably remember this, it's actually something that Daniel Harkavy, my co-author, coined, but it's this: self-leadership always precedes team leadership. If you don't know where you're going in your own life, it's very difficult to lead an organization, and it's very difficult to make a compelling case for why they should follow you if you're not clear where you're trying to go in your own life. So they really are related, and they're both important.
Absolutely. Okay, so that first lesson is start with a plan. Yep. What is lesson number two?
Lesson number two is to recruit the best players. You know, the thing about great conductors is they attract great players, just like Hugh Wolf had Horacio Gutierrez there as the pianist. Great conductors attract great players, and mediocre conductors attract mediocre players. And that's why when a city tries to get a conductor for their symphony, they try to get the very best one they can get, because they know he's going to attract the players that want to play for him. Same thing is true for, you know, football teams, for baseball teams, for hockey teams, all the rest. People want to play for the very best leaders. And as a leader, you've got to be able to attract, recruit, train, and develop the very best people you can find. And this really, you know, comes from, I think, having that clear vision to begin with, and then a commitment to really not settling for less than the best talent you can find. It's something I practice in my organization now. You know, we have a very defined, fairly elaborate recruiting process. We interview tons of people. We try to distill out of that the very best people. They go through a multi-layered interview process, but it's because we're trying to get the very best players we can get. Having vision as a leader is important, but you're not going to be able to accomplish it unless you've got A people on your team, A players on your team to help you make it happen or make it come to life.
Well, let's talk about the person who doesn't have as big of a platform or organization as you currently have. So the person who is very entrepreneurial, they're starting something brand new, they're not a household name that somebody would recognize them. How, you know, obviously bringing excellence to the table themselves is very important, but how do they basically convince somebody else that is a high quality person that they are worth getting on board with? That they are, how do they do that? How do they recruit without that kind of history or background?
Well, I think, again, it goes back to the vision. You know, what is it that you're trying to create? And I think that a lot of times we think as leaders that, gosh, we can't afford to pay for A-level talent. We can't get the best people because we can't pay what they expect. You know, I can tell you from hiring executives at every level, both at the top level in the C-suite, mid-level managers, people that are just starting out, that money is certainly a component, but it's not always the most important component. Oftentimes, it's the vision, the opportunity to play with other A players, the degree of autonomy that you give them, the opportunity to learn and grow and be part of something that's bigger than the sum of the parts. That's the kind of thing that attracts those A-level players. And so you got to be able to recruit with what you've got. And sometimes that's not being able to pay, you know, the very best wage or the very best compensation in the marketplace. And sometimes you just have to sell the vision. But that's also a great way to sort out the people. I don't want just people that are looking for the best paying job. The problem with those people is that as soon as another job comes along that will pay them a little bit more, they jump ship and they go to that. So, you know, I really do believe in people paying people well, and I want to pay them above what the market is just a little bit. And I want to create bonus compensation that rewards people for winning with the team. But that's not the essence of the pitch that we make when we're trying to recruit people. It's all about the vision and what it is we're trying to accomplish together.
Okay, so that lesson number two is to recruit the best players. What is lesson number three?
Yeah, the lesson number three is to be visible so that everyone can see you. This one is so important. So in a symphony, the conductor stands on a platform so that every single member of the orchestra can see him. And this is the only way that the orchestra can stay in alignment with each player starting and stopping at the appropriate time. I once went to a demonstration at the Philadelphia Philharmonic where it was a leadership conference, and they had the whole orchestra there. And the conductor walked away and he said, I want the orchestra to play without me conducting. I want you to hear what it sounds like. And it just wasn't right. You know, it wasn't in alignment. Nobody quite knew what to do, when to do it. Everybody had a different sense of what the timing was, what the rhythm was, what the volume should be, and all of that. So as a leader, it's critically important that you stay visible. And you can't keep your organization in alignment if you don't do that. And I think what that means for a lot of us, especially for those of us that are introverts, and I am one, you can't just go hide in your office and never be with the people and never be among them, never share the vision, just kind of hope that they get their work done and you don't have to be visible. But I think it's important that we are visible, that we're present with people, and that we give them that kind of moment by moment or at least routine or regular leadership so they can see us personally there, articulating what the vision is and what we're trying to do and giving meaning to our daily activities.
You know, and that's true even for organizations that work more virtually. I was actually talking to an organization this morning. Are you familiar with the Miles Advisory Group, Brian?
Yes, I sure am. Yep.
I'm keynoting at their conference this summer. And so I was talking to one of their team members this morning about twice a year they do a team conference. They do a summer conference, a winter conference, where they bring all their virtual employees, because a big chunk of their business is a virtual assistant.
Right. Yep.
But they bring them all together in one location. They pay for all of that simply so they can be face to face. And they want to be in front of their employees and their teammates. And I thought this morning, I'm sure it's a huge expense for them, but what a just an incredibly valuable offering they're giving to their employees, but also they're creating community and teamwork and credibility with their team simply by being face to face, being visible to one.
It's so critical. And I mean, we talked about this a couple of episodes ago, I think. They kind of run together after a while. But this is why I took my entire team on a cruise this last fall, because I knew that it was important as a virtual team that we get together and be in one place. And we do that with some regularity, and having those meetings when you're face to face, it's great to have video conferencing. We really believe in that. It's great to have a tool like Slack, which we use in place of email, and that's a place to connect too. But nothing really compares to that face-to-face discussion when you're there together, and you've got to make that happen.
Absolutely. All right. So far we've gone through three of the lessons that Michael learned from a symphony conductor in Nashville. The first is to start with a plan. The second is to recruit the best players. The third is to be visible so everyone can see you, which I love. And then what is that fourth lesson?
Yeah, the fourth one is to lead with your heart. And I love this one. And great conductors like Hugh Wolf get swept up into the music themselves. You know, they're passionate about what they're doing. They don't just play with their heads. You know, I mean, they could probably get a robot to read the music and, you know, do the arm movements and all that. But real conductors, great conductors, play with their hearts. And you can read it on their faces. You can sense it in their movements. I love watching the conductor at a symphony.
I do too.
But they're fully present and playing full out. And as a leader, I really think your heart is your most important asset. We've talked about this before in prior podcasts, and we'll have some links in the show notes, but I did an entire podcast on this back when I first started called The Importance of a Leader's Heart. I think you and I have covered that since then, but you know, it's important as a leader that you don't just lead with your head, that you're willing to open up your heart. You're able to be passionate when it's required. You're able to emote. You're able to share your deepest longings, your deepest desires, the things you really want to achieve and accomplish, and people sense that. And one of the things I loved working with Sam Moore when I was at Thomas Nelson, when he was the CEO and I was reporting to him, was that he was a heartfelt leader. And sometimes that didn't always have a positive manifestation. You know, if he got angry or disappointed, but there was never any question that he was all in and that he was leading from the heart. And that's why I think he had so many employees that worked for him for decades. I worked for him for 17 years. So it was because of his heart.
Has this, another personal question, has this ever been difficult for you, or does that come easily for you?
For me, it comes easily. I think once I gave myself permission to do it, because I think that early on, maybe when I was in my late 20s and early 30s, I thought that people would only respect me for my intellect, you know, so I tried to read a lot of books and I tried to be conversant, you know, in my craft and all of that, but I didn't really show my heart as much as I needed to. And I got permission as I got more experience to do that and to be more passionate about it. You know, and I don't try to be passionate with the negative stuff so much, you know, like if I'm angry about stuff, I realize that you got to be really careful with that, because there are sometimes when you say things in a moment of passion that you can't take back. So I don't like trying to unsay things that are hurtful. But on the positive side, yes, if I feel deeply about something, I want to be passionate about it. So I think that's what motivates people.
All right. Well, we've covered four of the eight lessons that Michael learned from a symphony conductor. So far, there, start with a plan, recruit the best players, be visible so everybody can see you, and lead with your heart. We still have four more coming up. But before we continue on with this episode, Michael, you've got something to share, right?
I do. For those of you who are building a platform online, or you know you need to be and would like to do that, I want to just take a minute and tell you about a major shortcut you can take. I'm going to be posting on April the 12th. So some of you may be listening to this after that. Some of you may be listening to this before that. But on April the 12th, I'm posting a set of three free training videos about how to skyrocket your impact online. And in these videos, you're going to learn eight simple tweaks that will blow up your blog or your social media presence with more traffic, more influence, and more impact for your message. And you can see all those in action in a real world makeover, where we take a couple and we take their current platform, what it is now, and we completely make it over. And you get to see the whole evolution, the whole transition, and you're going to hear the results of that platform makeover and what the effect was on their on their platform. So that's going to be happening at platformuniversity.com/skyrocket. And once the series is available, if you sign up before April the 12th, we'll email that to you. And after that, you can go there and sign up. And again, it's 3 free videos. We take you through every aspect of how to skyrocket your platform and how to grow your following.
Of course, you said the magic word, which was free. Which
yes.
So this is something that is easy to apply. It's a free resource available April 12th.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, April 12th. Again, you can go to platformuniversity.com/skyrocket. And basically, this is going to help you if you're feeling overwhelmed at all. It will help transition you from that overwhelmed place to saying, yes, I can totally do
exactly right.
All right. Well, that sounds amazing. I definitely encourage everybody listening in to check it out as soon as you can. Notes as well, where you can look for that too. All right. Today we're talking about the 8 leadership lessons Michael learned from a recent trip to the Nashville Symphony. Side note, I need to go see the symphony again. All this talk about the symphony is making me miss it. It's one of my favorite things.
Me too. I keep thinking I need to buy season tickets, and I've got to do that. I'm not traveling as much anymore. I could totally do that.
I actually was just thinking of that last week, that I need to just, because you can get afternoon tickets. And for those of us who are entrepreneurs, you know, we work all the time, but it means that in the afternoon, sometimes we can take off. So I think I'm going to do that.
Excellent.
So we've already talked about 4 lessons that he's learned from a symphony conductor. We have 4 more. Let's dig right into number 5.
Number 5, and this was hard for me to learn, but delegate and focus on only what you can do. Now, here's the thing. The conductor doesn't do everything. He doesn't sell the tickets. You know, he doesn't participate usually in the preliminaries before the concert begins. He doesn't even make sure the orchestra is in tune. The concertmaster does that. And he stays off the stage until it's time for him to do what only he can do, which is to lead the orchestra. And as a leader, this is a very difficult lesson to learn. You know, especially at the beginning, if you're starting out as an entrepreneur, you feel like, gosh, I've got to do everything. If it's going to get done, I've got to do it. This is why, if you're going to be successful over the long term, you've got to increasingly focus on what only you can do and delegate the rest. And maybe you're thinking, well, I can't delegate because I can't afford additional help. Or maybe you're thinking, I don't delegate because it takes me longer to explain how to do it than to just do it myself. And I've written a couple of blog posts and there's some podcasts on that, but just search at michaelhyatt.com for the word delegate. And there's a ton of resources for you there to get started. It's never been easier to delegate than it is right now. And just imagine if you had those 5 hours that you're spending doing something you hate or something you're not very good at, if you had 5 hours a week back to focus on what you're best at, what would that do for your business? What would that do for your organization? That's how you have to think about it. And I've gotten to the place now, Michelle, in my business where there are 3 and only 3 things that are my unique ability, and I focus on those. And if they're not one of those 3 things, somebody else does it. Now, that didn't happen overnight. That's happened over 4 years. But I'll tell you, that ensures that I make the greatest contribution to the team, and I'm the most satisfied in the work that I'm doing because I'm doing what I'm best at.
Don't you think that many times we get in, we almost let the urgency of our task push us into reactive mode rather than being proactive
about it? Yeah, and sometimes we're just trying to solve the problem at hand rather than thinking about the system that created the problem and how can we solve that in a way that's more sustainable. You know, so for example, you might think, okay, look, I don't have time. I've got to book my travel myself, or I need to handle this email myself, all these emails that are coming in. And I'll tell you, if you're successful, that's going to become overwhelming very quickly. But instead of trying to do that, to start thinking, okay, what if I could hire somebody and it was only 5 hours a week? And that's how I started. You mentioned Brian Miles and Shannon, and I started with EA Help. And you can find more information about them at michaelhyatt.com/EA Help. But I started with an assistant at 5 hours a week, and that I got so much traction as a result of that. And my business moved forward, you know, in a very discernible way. So then I went to 10 hours a week, and then pretty soon it was 15, and then it was 20. And today I've got like 17 full-time people, but it didn't start there, but you can start small and grow into it. So you don't have to, you know, have a big wad of cash to make this happen. You can incrementally get into it.
Yeah, and there's you and I did an episode of how you can delegate without a team mm-hmm. when you don't have a team. So there's even things you can do when you have no people at all. And then, you know, again, like you said, you may not be able to hire an executive assistant, but I know friends who hired an intern and paid an intern salary to somebody who was hungry to learn and trained them, and they took on some of those.
Yeah, totally. And again, it's the same principle, though. It gets you freed up to do what you do best, what you love doing and what you're competent at and what's going to bring in the bacon for your business.
This is a tough one, but I think you're right that this is one of the most important lessons that you've learned from the symphony conductor, that you need to delegate and focus only on what you can do. What is lesson number six?
Lesson number six is be aware of your gestures and their impact. Now, this is subtle, but a conductor can't afford to make an unintentional gesture. Everything means something. Flick of the wrist,
yep.
Raising of an eyebrow, you know, the closing of the eyes, all that has meaning. And the team, the symphony in this case, is watching every movement because it mm-hmm. means something. And I think as a leader, you have to be conscious of your nonverbal communication as well. And I remember, and I've told the story 1,000 times, so I won't tell it again, but sitting in a meeting, it was a business review where a consultant that I had confronted me at the break and said, "Are you mad?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Well, you should tell your face, because people are really intimidated because you're not smiling. You're doing nothing that is welcoming them into the conversation. It looks like you're, you know, interrogating them and scrutinizing what they're saying." And I felt great. You know, I didn't have any ill will toward anybody, but the unintentional gestures of that were creating an impression on people. And I think we need to be alert for that ourselves. You know, how we conduct ourselves around the office, how we travel, you know, all those things mean something to people, and we need to be conscious of them, just like a symphony conductor is.
Now, on this particular lesson, speak to the fact that so much of what we do right now is digital. So our gestures may be a text or an email. How do you guard your gestures and your impact when it comes through digital?
Well, I think one of the most important ways is to know when not to use it. Okay, so it's really easy if you've got bad news to deliver to somebody to kind of compose a missive in the safety of your office and send it out digitally and not really have to confront that person or, you know, to risk them being angry with you. And I think that whenever we've got something negative to convey, that needs to be the most touch, most personal that we can do it. So, for example, if there's somebody you need to criticize or somebody where you need to reprove, you know, that works for you, you got something you just want them to shape up on, don't do that on email. Use email for praising or for simple instruction or direction. But if you've got something difficult to discuss, you know, pick up the phone, have a video conference, or best of all, get face-to-face and deliver that news face-to-face. Because in those situations, you can be alert to the feedback. You can know how it's being received. You can moderate your tone of voice, your volume, all that stuff when you can see the other person and make sure that you have the right impact or create the impact that you want to have.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. All right, great. So this lesson number six is to be aware of your gestures and their impact. That's both face-to-face as well as anything that you might shoot over email and text. And then what is...
Lesson number seven is keep your back to the audience. Now, conductors are aware of the audience, but their focus, as you know, is on the players and their performance. The only time the conductor stops to even acknowledge the audience is before the playing begins and after it's finished. Other than that, he's focused on delivering an outstanding product. And I think too often as leaders, we can play to the audience and be focused on them and completely bungle what it is we're trying to do. You obviously can't afford to ignore the market. You got to be aware of them and what they want, but that's a crucial distinction. They can't be your primary focus. Not if you're going to wow them and ultimately deliver what they want, which is an outstanding performance. You've got to focus on your team. You've got to focus on what it is you're trying to create so that you can truly wow them and exceed their expectations. So it's a subtle distinction, but I think it's important. It's one of the things that I loved about Steve Jobs. You know, Steve had an incredible intuitive sense of what the market wanted even before they could articulate it. You know, he was great at that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you didn't get the sense that he was so obsessed with the market. You know, in fact, I think he said one time that the problem with market surveys is people don't know what they don't know. You know, nobody would have said before the iPhone was invented, you know, we need a smartphone. I mean, nobody had that in mind. In fact, the field was very crowded. And when Apple announced that they were going to get in the phone market, there were a lot of critics, particularly analysts on Wall Street, that said, this is ridiculous. This market is so crowded. They have no business getting into this. And now, of course, they dominate the industry. So you got to stay focused on what it is you're trying to create and really focused on your team and leading them. And there's an appropriate time to acknowledge the audience, but you that can't be your primary focus.
I almost wonder if it's you said that there's just a slight difference between the two. I almost wonder if that difference is a difference between serving your audience and just trying to impress them.
That's good.
Now, when you are focused on, when the conductor is focused on the symphony itself and the producing an excellent piece of art, whatever, his goal is to serve the audience. And so in order to serve the audience, he needs to deliver his very best music. But, you know, turning around facing the audience is really more about impressing the audience. It's really self.
Well, and I think this is one of the things that people hate about politicians, because they always seem to have their finger in the air, you know, trying to figure out which way the wind's blowing, because they're going to modify their message based on, you know, what the political climate is. And I think what people want is somebody who will just tell it like it is and be someone of conviction. And even in this election right now that's going on, and, you know, love it or hate it, I think the guys that are getting the most traction are the people that are the most principled and most convinced of what it is they're standing for and not really concerned about public opinion.
Yeah, and I see some truth to that too. So, all right, so keep your back to the audience. And I love how you unpacked that for us a little bit. And then what is the final lesson here?
Yeah, I love this one. And I loved how the symphony ended, because lesson number 8 is to share the spotlight. You know, when the concert's over and the audience is clapping, the conductor turns to the audience, he takes a bow, and then a good conductor, and Hugh Wolf did it in this situation, he then turns to the orchestra, invites them to stand and bow as well. So he shares the glory with his colleagues, realizing that without them, the music would not be possible. So if the conductor walks to the stage with only his baton, how much music could he produce without the orchestra? Well, zero. I mean, that's all he's got, and it doesn't make any noise. So he needs the orchestra. He can't do it without the orchestra. And a symphony is the personification of team effort. And I think the same is true in our organizations. As a leader, we've got to make sure that others get the credit. You got to brag on your people. You got to do it in private. You've got to do it in public. You've got to write it down if you can, but you're going to get more of what you notice and affirm. And it's, by the way, true in marriage. It's true in parenting, all kinds of leadership situations, but it's especially true in the workforce. You've got to give people credit and let them share the spotlight. There's nothing I hate worse than a leader who wants to take credit, all the credit, and not share the glory.
Well, you just won't have much of a team for very long.
You won't. Absolutely won't. People will not work for that for very long. The best players will leave.
Well, and your audience will shrink as well, because people are very observant and they see that. They can sense it even from miles and miles away. They can totally tell. All right. So today we've been talking about 8 leadership lessons that Michael learned from a symphony conductor. The first lesson is to start with a plan. Lesson number 2, recruit the best players. 3, be visible so everyone can see you. 4, lead with your heart. The 5th lesson, delegate and focus on only what you can do. 6, be aware of your gestures and their impact. 7, keep your back to the audience. And 8 is like the grand finale. Can I use a musical term? I think it's the best. Share the spotlight, which is, you just can't overemphasize that one enough. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can get the show notes as well as a full transcript at michaelhyatt.com. If you prefer to watch rather than just listen, we also have the video posted online at michaelhyatt.com as well. But can you do us a favor today before you go? I promise it won't take very long, only about 30 seconds or so. Please head on over to iTunes and rate this podcast. It helps us more than you can possibly know. It's one of the best gifts that you can give us. It's just to take a few seconds before you sign off and go over to iTunes and rate this podcast. It helps us to get this material into the hands of the people who need it the most. Before we go, Michael, do you have any?
Yeah, I've kind of got an assignment, Michelle. First of all, at the very least, I would encourage the people who are listening to this to attend a symphony and watch this in real time for yourself. Take notes for the podcast if you want, but go watch it because it'll make it a huge impression on you more than us just talking about it. Even better, and I did this one time, I took my entire team, my executive team, 12 people, to Philadelphia, and we went through this drill with the Philadelphia Orchestra and got to see it up close and personal. But take your team to a symphony and then have a discussion about what this means for your leadership as a team with the people that you're trying to lead.
Excellent advice. I think I might have to do that. Maybe I'll take my family. That would be a great thing to do. Thanks, Michael. And thank you for joining us today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.